Hi, and welcome to The Foxhole, a show that brings you insights into hot topics, lifestyle design tips, and tactics for success.
So you watched the season premiere of Westworld?
I did.
But you didn't watch the first season?
Well, I watched the first season recap. Like, they have, like, these 10-minute recaps you can watch on YouTube.
Yeah.
So I wasn't, like, totally lost.
But those are meant for people who have seen it. And it's just like, hey, here's a reminder of the things that happened in the first season.
Why would you want that?
Well, there was a fair amount of time, I think, that passed between the end of the first season and the premiere of the second season. Maybe even a year. I forget exactly how long, but it was a long enough time that you want to refresh people's memories. Mm. And the thing about the first season is that almost all of the world building happens there. And it's not something that you can, I think, recap in 10 minutes. There's so much just happens over the first 10 episodes or whatever the first season is.
Yeah, it was a quick recap. So are you saying, like, I need to go back in and watch every single episode of Westworld season one?
Yeah, I think that there's no way that you're going to be able to appreciate. Like, I went back and rewatched the season two premiere pretending that I hadn't seen the first season, and I was like, what is going on here? There's no way that you could catch, like, how do you even know who's a robot and who's a human?
Mike, how do you pretend that you haven't seen something that you've seen? Is that a superhuman talent you have?
Well, I guess a little bit. I mean, I was able, yeah, I guess. I just kind of got into this
headspace. You can, like, erase a lot of bad memories that way.
Well, you would think so, but no.
I wished I had, because opening up and just seeing all these dead bodies laying around everywhere was not the first impression I wanted to have of Westworld.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is that I know you have an aversion to violence or watching violence, and so Westworld is kind of
a strange quirk of mine.
Yeah. And, like, the season two premiere was pretty gritty at some parts, especially when they're cutting up people's heads and stuff like that. But I do think that you should go back and did you watch it on? Do you have HBO now?
No, I have HBO on the TV, so I just, like, watched it, like, real time. I mean, I could have just recorded it, but I watched it real time.
Do they have the first season available on demand or whatever?
Probably.
Well, I would suggest watching one or two episodes of the first episode or two of the first season. And if you're into it and feel good about it, you should watch the rest and then continue season two so that we can talk about it, like, more in depth.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of bummed that, like, I missed the whole Anthony Hopkins, you know, part of it. I like him as an actor.
He's amazing. And he really made the first season really, really special. And the other thing, too, is that a lot of the surprise and a lot of the big reveals from the first season are kind of spoiled by the premiere of the second season.
Okay, can you just give me, like, a high level overview of, like, what's the purpose and what they're trying to do, like, with the host and even in just creating this host world?
Yeah. So we don't really know. I mean, I believe that's part of the big mystery of the second season, is going to be, like, what's really going on here. In the first season, you arrive at Westworld. I mean, as a viewer of the show, you arrive sort of alongside of the characters in the show arriving to Westworld. And it's advertised as it's like an amusement park. People go there. They pay an astronomical amount of money. It's like $40,000 a day, I think, to be at Westworld.
For, like, a human to go there?
For a human to go there, yeah. It's really only for, like, the very wealthy. And once you arrive, all of the, they call them hosts, but they're all robots. They're all, like, human robots. And you basically go, and each of these robots on a day-to-day basis are following what they call loops. Each robot has a narrative that was designed, that their story, their origin story, their background, and their current day purpose and stories. These things are all sort of programmed and invented by the Westworld staff. So it's kind of like Disneyland or Disney World, where there are these creative teams that design, build, and narrate all the characters. And then as a customer, you go to the park and you can sort of do whatever you want. There are all these little sub adventures and subplots that you can go on as you sort of enter Westworld. The various hosts will kind of stop you and try to get you to go on different adventures. And then there really aren't any rules regarding what you're allowed to do and not allowed to do. So there's a lot of sex, a lot of violence. You can just kill hosts. You can do just about anything you want to them. And so that's the sort of high-level pitch of what Westworld is as an amusement park.
Wow. But it's supposed to be, like, relatively safe for humans, right? Like, you could...
It's supposed to be extremely safe.
But not vice versa. Supposed to be.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Hosts aren't able to hurt humans, and humans aren't able to shoot one another. Like, you can shoot another human. Like, if humans get shot, it's sort of like a paintball kind of effect, I think, where it feels like you feel it a little bit, but it doesn't do any actual damage to you. And then what happens is, in the first season, the hosts start to become sentient. They start to remember things, because every time that a host gets killed or something horrible happens to them, they bring them into the sort of behind-the-scenes Westworld management area, and they reset the hosts. They sort of wipe their memory, clean them up, and then put them back out there. And then those hosts just kind of relive their same sort of narrative, like their loop over and over again. But what starts to happen is they start to remember the things that happened to them, and they start to become sentient. And the first season is all about that sort of awakening. And the second season here, we're starting to understand that there's something deeper and darker going on behind the company that owns Westworld and a few other parks like it, because there's Shogun World and a couple of others. The name of the company is Delos, D-E-L-O-S. And they're doing something shady. We don't really know. I mean, they kind of started to pull the curtain back a little bit in the premiere as to what they're up to, but they're up to something a little deeper and darker that we as the audience don't really know about yet. And I think that's going to be one of the big secrets of the second season. And this is kind of like a spoiler thing about the first season, but you would probably already know this, having watched the second season premiere, but the end of the first season, a handful of these robots achieve, like, straight up full-on sentience.
Like the Dolores character.
Yeah. And she was fire in the premiere. It's crazy because her character evolves from being this very simple sort of stable maid as part of her loop and narrative. And she becomes very of a revolutionary almost. I mean, she's the one who's going to lead the robots to try and take over humanity, it seems like. And then there's Maeve, who is the one who was like looking for her daughter. And she's fully sentient also. And then we don't know what happened to the rest of the hosts. So
can robots really become sentient? Like, can they really become conscious?
It's a big fear. I mean, this is what Elon Musk, when he's out there talking about the danger of generalized artificial superintelligence, he's talking about like a Westworld scenario. And it's absolutely possible. A generalized artificial intelligence is definitely going to happen. And the implications are, we don't really know what they're going to be. And they're pretty frightening. And a lot of really smart people like Elon Musk and Bill Gates, and the list goes on and on, of people who would be in a position to understand this, are mortified of the possibilities of what can happen there. And so Westworld is kind of exciting because it's exploring that idea. And it is pretty realistic. I mean, I have to say, I think that in terms of science fiction, it's not far off the mark. Mm. Especially the existence of something like Westworld, you know? But Westworld, I think, is just interesting because it's a sort of commentary on where this tech could go, how it might debut, and what the implications might be. And then a lot of the sort of human stories behind all of it. I think it's a great show. It's one of the best shows, I think, on television right now. And I'm pretty excited that they are keeping the pace up with the second season. Like, the premiere of the second, the first season was great. When it ended, I was blown away, and I felt like, wow, this was just such an amazing piece of television. And I hope it continues at the same, because like without Anthony Hopkins, you're a little worried that like maybe it's not going to be the same, or sometimes shows don't get better as they go on. But based on that premiere, I feel like it's going to be awesome all the way through.
Well, I haven't formed an opinion yet on it. I think I'm going to have to go back and check out some of like the first episodes, like you said.
Was the violence a big turnoff?
Yeah, it's just so much.
It really is kind of gratuitous.
Okay, so wait, do we know what it is about artificial intelligence that allows it to gain some consciousness?
Mm-mm. Nope. I mean, Westworld presents a kind of theory about it, but it's not really a scientific theory. It's more of a dramatic storytelling device. In the real world, a lot of people are working on it. Every major tech company is working on trying to get to this. I mean, even nation states are. Putin had said something about the first nation state to reach AI, like generalized AI, is going to rule the world.
Let's hope it's not them.
Right? Seriously. And that the sort of like having that power, I mean, it's going to be a greater power than having the nuke, like having the first nuclear weapon. Like having real AI is going to be like a, I don't know. There's so much out there on this topic about sort of like doomsday type scenarios. I think we're still a little ways off, but it is kind of scary.
In a non-doomsday scenario, how did you like that article about the robot building an IKEA furniture without blowing a gasket?
I mean, this is like the greatest thing.
This is like the dream, right?
Have you ever put together IKEA furniture? Yeah. I've put together...
Yes, I have put together IKEA furniture a long time ago. Yeah.
I've moved around a lot over the past 5 years, maybe even like 7 to 8 years. I've done a lot of moving, and I wind up every time I move to a new place, or historically, as I've moved around, I've tried to get rid of stuff, especially furniture, because it sort of weighs you down. But I find that every time I move into a new place, I wind up buying the same furniture stuff from IKEA. Like I always get the same bookshelf. I always get the same thing. And then when I put that stuff together, like I get that big bookshelf, and putting that together is maybe one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. So a robot that builds IKEA furniture is amazing. The idea of that sounds great. But further than that, like, what about the idea of just robots that help you out with all of your domestic needs? I saw a headline in the past couple of days that Amazon's working on like robots for your home. And there was also a photo of Jeff Bezos from maybe it was around April Fool's. But there's a photo of him walking around with one of those Boston Dynamics scary robot dog looking things. And there was that video from not long ago where one of those scary robot things was like opening doors. Do you remember that? It's like it's got that like claw on its back and it calls its friend over and it opens the door up for its friend and then goes inside. So, I mean, like that stuff is kind of happening in the lab right now where they're building robots that can move things around and detect their environment and communicate with one another. So I think that we're probably within 5 years to a decade of having a little domestic intelligent robot, like one of those dogs who just, whatever, he's always just kind of like straightening up your house or cleaning things up or whatever you might want to task that thing with. We're super close to that.
Yeah, I mean, they came out with those little robotic vacuum guys, gosh, almost a decade ago now. So
like a Roomba?
It's about time. Yeah. The one that like zooms around the floor and cleans it.
Yeah. But it's also scary. I don't know. I mean, technology is advancing at such a accelerating pace, and we're quickly entering into a world where I think we're going to be surrounded by a lot of like robotic and AI-ish type assistants. And it's exciting. But stuff like Westworld makes me a little concerned.
So everyone's aware of the latest news surrounding Southwest and their emergency landing and what happened with that engine failure. But everyone may not know what Southwest did and is doing to keep customers happy. And what they ended up doing, and really most immediately, which I think is what most people found so impressive, and like just to like back up for a second, Southwest, like it or not as an airline, like it or not, you hear a lot of people talk about like the lineup situation and calling it a quote unquote cattle call. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. And I fly all the major airlines, but I really love Southwest because I think they've done a great job as a company in trying to make air travel like it used to be. Maybe not the sexy part, but just an enjoyable experience. You can book a flight. You can cancel that flight without change fees, which every other airline charges. You can do it right online. You don't have to call in. It's not like a major process. You can literally go online, click cancel flight, and the money goes right back into your account. And so they offer a lot of these features that just make life a little bit easier as it relates to air travel. And on a lot of the flights, especially like depending if you're flying to somewhere fun or, you know, that might be a vacation destination or somewhere like Vegas, for example, they give the flight attendants some liberties in how they give you their flight instructions, you know, when they talk about the air mask dropping and they talk about like all of these emergency procedures, yet still communicating what you would need to know as an emergency procedure. And so you get a little bit of humor and a little bit of air on some of that stuff. And then, you know, you get free checked bags. And I can't say enough good things about Southwest as a company. And I think the CEO has done a great job in building this brand. You can see that those results have shown up in their growth.
Yeah.
And, you know, the new terminals that they've added in different states and how crowded the new terminals are because everyone's flying Southwest now because they've done this. So it's no surprise that their reaction to this critically, you know, possibly reputation-impairing engine explosion, that their response and reaction to this was swift, positive, and intelligent.
And so what do they do?
I'm going to tell you, like, unlike other airlines, right, that we've seen recently, like the guy that got drug off the one airline, like we've seen how CEOs yeah. and airlines have reacted. So what Southwest did immediately, like the next day, was basically send a letter. I'm not sure if it came in a paper format or an email, but something to every single passenger that was on that flight, apologizing and letting them know that they're there for them. Additionally, they decided to send out $5,000 to every single passenger. Now, the one passenger that, unfortunately, and it's so horribly tragic, that lost her life, I'm sure something different's happening there. But for everyone else who was not injured and just, you know, had to go through this traumatic experience, they're getting $5,000 cash, no questions asked, no strings attached, and a $1,000 travel voucher. Now, what was brilliant on their part, aside from just doing the right thing, right, and reaching out and offering this and trying to be there for people, was the travel voucher. Because what they're communicating to their customer is, we want you back on our flight. Here's some money towards a, you know, a flight. But, and that they had already sent the checks out. I mean, this just happened. Like, literally, this just happened, right? Like, what was that, like, on Wednesday last week or Tuesday? And I think it happened on Monday. But anyways, this had just happened, and they already have done this. Like, if you were one of those passengers, you would have a check in your mailbox. And so it's just a really intelligent, thoughtful, strategic action on their part to do this. And
yeah, and you feel like if you were a passenger on that flight, that would have been a satisfactory... Because, you know, the other thing is, though, like, how culpable do you think Southwest is in all of this? Have they disclosed what happened there yet, or, like, what the actual cause of the engine explosion was?
So they're still... I don't know that the investigation's been completed, but in my initial research and just, like, looking at what happened, this is an engine that is in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of planes. And it's an engine that was inspected like a couple days before the plane took off. And it kind of just seems like a freak accident. I mean, it's not like it was an engine that was like known amongst airlines to be a crappy engine or something. Like, it was a high quality engine that a lot of airlines are using.
What's interesting about this is that you would think that, like, unlike the United incident where like the airline made a conscious decision to... drag like that bleeding crying man off a plane or whatever, like that was like a bad decision. Like, there was a chain of really bad decisions that led to that,
really bad decisions.
whereas with Southwest, it just was kind of a freak thing, but they still took responsibility for it.
Yeah, they took responsibility.
Like, took ownership over it.
They took
ownership.
And I mean, it's not their fault that the engine just exploded, as far as we know at this point. And they're like, whether it was or wasn't our fault, I want to take
care
of you as a
money
customer.
And like, I'm sorry. Yeah, totally. Which is like the, as you said, probably total opposite of what you could expect from any other airline.
What we've seen lately, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, as a business owner, you know how important, you know yourself as a business owner, right? Like, how important keeping your customers happy is, right? And your reputation.
Yeah.
And especially in a day and age like now where it's... Let's have a discussion about this. I don't know if this is the only thing, but customer service is so important. And I feel like it's the only thing that you can do to differentiate yourself as a tool available to you as a business than anyone else.
It's probably one of the easiest, highest impact or like bang for your buck ways to improve your business.
To improve your reputation, to improve.
Yeah, like everything. Like if there's one activity that you can really excel at, customer service is definitely one to look at.
To keep customers coming back. I mean, everyone talks, right? Like nowadays, like too, like,
yeah.
How do you know about a show? Like, how do I know about a show? Because you come and tell me, oh, this show's so great. And then I'm going to go and I'm going to want to watch that show. It's the same thing for a business, right? If I had a great experience on an airline and they treated me well, or a great experience in a retail store and they treated me well, I'm going to go and tell my friends and so on and so forth. So I give them two thumbs up.
Yeah, customer service is super important.
Super important.
So do you feel like everybody on that flight, like 5K or 6K was the right number? Like how do you, if you're like sitting in the boardroom, how do you determine what size check to send everybody? How do they calculate $5,000 was the number?
That's a great question. I mean, as a passenger, like if I was on that flight, I don't know that there's any dollar amount, and hopefully their letter says that, that could make up for the terror that I would feel getting on another flight. Having experienced that, but I'm okay, right? Like for the people that are okay, you're okay. And it wasn't, you know, it was a freak thing.
If you were on a plane like that and there was a situation like an engine exploding or some crazy thing, like, do you think any of those people are going to fly again? Would you fly again?
Yeah, I don't know that I would fly the next day, but I would fly again because, I mean, you can only go off statistics, right? That's why we love math. Yeah. And the statistics of getting injured or dying on an airplane are the least out as far as any transportation. I mean, cars, number one.
For sure.
Right? Motorcycle, being a pedestrian. Yeah. There's like all these different, and then like flying's like the least, so.
And I've been in car accidents before, and I've still gotten into cars again. So I feel like planes are a little more dependable. But that would be a pretty frightening thing to witness, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Thanks for tuning in. For more information, head over to foxhole.fm. That's foxhole.fm. If you have any questions, please email us at feedback@foxhole.fm. And if you're enjoying what you hear, please leave us a great review on your favorite podcast platform or iTunes. Thanks again for listening.